The September fires destroyed nearly 2,500 homes in Jackson County alone, so people had to find new places to live in a housing market that was already tight and generally overpriced. Few rules affect the economics, but there are rules against discrimination, and the Fair Housing Council of Oregon keeps an eye on how people seeking housing are treated by potential sellers and renters. Let's check in on the post-fire effects in Southern Oregon with two guests from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Shile Reuter is Education and Outreach Director. Welcome, Shile.
Oh, thanks so much. Really glad to be here.
It's good to have you, along with Meg Tinnen, who is the Southern Oregon Education and Outreach Specialist. Welcome, Meg.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Shile, I want to start with you in just a real general sense. Give the overview. In a non-pandemic, non-fire year, which this is not, obviously, how busy does the council stay doing outreach and informing people of their rights?
We are pretty busy. So we are an agency. Our mission is to end illegal housing discrimination through access to education and enforcement of fair housing law. And so we have team members throughout the state that are out doing education with the community. And then we also have a hotline where people can call and report housing discrimination if they think they've experienced it. We get over 2,000 contacts a year. And of those contacts, about 10% are related to housing discrimination, but what we know is only 1 in 10 acts of housing discrimination ever gets reported to us.
So 10%, and yet 10% is what gets reported too.
Yes.
Okay. So there could be a whole lot more going on out there than turns out to be true, or that does turn
likely
out to be true. Yeah.
Yeah, likely. And what we find is people just don't know what their housing rights are, so they don't know that there's an agency like ours that they can report to. So that's why it's so important that we're here today and we're getting the word out about what we do, because folks are still going to be experiencing housing discrimination as they're looking for new housing.
Shile, why don't you give that hotline number now? We'll see if we can mention it a few more times before we're done here.
Yeah, our phone number is 503-223-8197. And that's how you get in contact with our hotline, or you can email us at information@fhco.org, or just go to our website, fhco.org, and we've got a form that people can fill out and contact us.
Okay, fhco.org and information@fhco.org and 503-223-8197 for the hotline.
Correct.
And then Shile, to get more specific about this year, what have you know? Because we obviously got the confounding factors of not just the fires, but also the pandemic and the eviction pauses and a lot of other issues going on here. So what's the activity been like in people reaching out to FHCO this year?
Yeah, a lot of what we're hearing about is housing providers wanting to know how they screen for folks in a time of COVID, what kinds of questions they can ask and can't ask, and then certainly people getting discriminated against because housing providers assuming that they must have COVID or been exposed due to where they work, like maybe in hospitals or in prison settings. We're also hearing about folks who've been displaced from fires, really struggling with finding housing and finding housing providers that will take housing vouchers, even though housing providers are supposed to under fair housing law, and not realizing that. Meg can also give you a better idea as far as a snapshot of what we're seeing in housing discrimination in Southern Oregon.
That was where I was moving next. You anticipated well. So Meg, give us an idea of this year in particular and what was going on even before the fires.
Yeah, well, the Fair Housing Council had started work to kind of convene a collaborative advisory team in Southern Oregon, made up of about 7 counties and stakeholders to weigh in and make a plan for how to address the biggest fair housing issues. And the things that came up in that advisory group, you know, before the fires was what Shile just mentioned is the housing voucher concern, housing providers not wanting to take either Section 8 or payments from agencies for security deposit or rental payments, but also disability is a big issue, as well as familial status, so families with children in particular facing discrimination, and then also national origin, and in particular the Latinx population in Southern Oregon experiencing discrimination. So those were things that we were already focused on as addressing, kind of focusing our efforts towards. And then, you know, after the fire, as we've, you know, convened again and as I'm working to gather more information from the community on what folks are seeing, it seems like it's a lot of those same things. It's just, you know, kind of exacerbated. So it's a lot of the same issues that were underlying. We just know that in times of disaster and crisis that, fair housing needs, increase. as does segregation discrimination.
Meg Tinnen and Shail Reuter are guests here on the Jefferson Exchange, both with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Meg Tinnen is the Southern Oregon specialist of the two. Shail Reuter is the Education and Outreach Director for FHCO for the whole state. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, you know, things perhaps you've experienced that you want to share with us here on the Exchange, you're welcome to join in at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Back to the issue of vouchers that both of you have mentioned. Is this really an option for a landlord? I mean, they're going to get paid. It's just a question of who pays them, right?
Yeah, right. And one of the concerns that housing providers have is that they don't want to deal with sort of the paperwork or the agency or those sorts of things. And so it can be, they see it as a real challenge. Meg, what did you want to say?
Oh, yeah, all of that. And I just wanted to add that, you know, there can also be a kind of a second layer of discrimination happening sometimes with that, because we know that folks that are accessing, whether it's vouchers or agency payments, you know, there may be a higher rate of, you know, people with disabilities or, you know, other protected classes who are using those things. So it may be, one, the issue of just the voucher itself, but there may be kind of secondary discrimination issues happening too.
All right. But the point is that nobody gets to say no to a voucher, do they?
Correct. Nobody gets to say no to a voucher. It's really, housing providers should be going off of what their screening criteria are around criminal credit, rental history, you know, income, employment history, those sorts of things, and go off the screening criteria and consider the voucher as part of a person's source of income. One of the things that we also see right now is hotels struggling with understanding that they also have to follow fair housing law if people are actually living there after the fire. So it's not just people are there for a couple of days, but folks are actually living there. We're also seeing some of these Airbnbs start to struggle as they are shifting over to longer-term housing and not realizing they also have to follow fair housing law, also have to accept vouchers as well if they are, you know, turning into longer-term housing. So we can also be an educational resource for housing providers as well, because we would so much rather be on the front end in educating versus being on the back end when our enforcement team is having to reach out to them.
All right, that's a really important point. So it's not just that you're there for people who are making sure that they are not discriminated against, but you are also there as a resource for people who have properties to sell or rent to make sure that they are complying with the law.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, that is
good.
Yeah,
we understand that if we're trying to ensure equal access to housing choice, that we really need everybody involved in the housing process on board with what these laws are and understanding them. And oftentimes what we find is housing providers don't want to discriminate. They might just not know what the laws are, and so they may be discriminating accidentally. And so we'd rather be an educational body than a punitive body.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Education is always a good thing. And that's what you both are involved in. So Meg Tinnen, let's turn to the fires in Southern Oregon. And I understand you've been keeping a presence at the Fire Relief Center in Phoenix.
Yeah, that's right. I've been there on Mondays, and I'm going to continue that, doing socially distanced conversations and providing resources to folks who are there to access fire relief support.
Mm-hmm. And how many people have come to see you there?
It's been pretty busy. I think a lot of what I found from the last few weeks since we started this process is that it's a lot of you know, education up front, because right now people's priorities really are, I just need housing, right? We have so many people in situations still that are looking or are, you know, currently homeless or staying in cars or RVs. And so when you bring up housing discrimination, sometimes people don't think that that's an issue right away, but as I'm having conversations with people and they feel more comfortable talking about what they're experiencing, they realize that, oh, housing discrimination does actually impact me, and as I'm looking for housing, it does. So a lot of it is just kind of laying that groundwork of giving people an understanding of what their rights are, and then some cues on some red flags that they could look for, and what it should be like, and especially the issue of vouchers and agency payments. That's something that a lot of folks aren't aware of as a protected class, and if they're being told that the housing provider doesn't accept those, sometimes they just don't even realize that that's something that's protected.
Okay, so just to be super clear on this, because I know I'm drumming on it a little bit, but I want to make it clear that a voucher is payment. It is just payment coming from somebody other than the person who actually lives in the dwelling. But so a voucher can't be rejected, you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the other issues that you're finding as a, I mean, obviously there's the whole general crush of housing. This was a very tight housing market in the Rogue Valley before the fire, the Alameda fire in particular, destroyed nearly 2,500 dwellings. So super tight market now, got by anybody's standards. And what kinds of issues are people running into in addition to the voucher situation?
I think that one thing that's going to start to come up more and more, and that we're already starting to hear kind of the beginnings of, is questions around occupancy standards. And that's, we just have a lot of families here and friends that are doubling up, right, in housing. And I think that's actually the majority of folks that were displaced from the fires at this point are staying with friends or family. And so far, it's been less of an issue, but we're starting to hear, you know, pushback. And if occupancy standards that are being enforced by housing providers are unreasonable, you know, sometimes that's actually discrimination around familial status, and that can be an issue. So that's something that we're keeping an eye out for and looking out as well as disability. That continues to be a concern, and I think you know, this isn't a fair housing issue necessarily, but folks with disabilities being able to navigate, you know, different application process and getting services. But once they are actually in housing, ensuring that they have the supports that are needed for them to have access to housing, both getting in and also just staying, being able to, you know, maintain stability in that housing situation.
Meg Tinnen and Shyle Reuter, again, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Let me give you their hotline number, which is 503-223-8197. You can also email them at information@fhco.org. I'll give the number again, 503-223-8197. You mentioned the doubling up, Meg, and I've been hearing that a fair amount, and that's one of the health concerns, actually, in the pandemic as well, is that mm-hmm. you get so many people living in tight quarters. If your lease says, you know, this can be occupied by four people and you bring another family in with you, you're technically in violation of the lease, aren't you?
Right. If there's specific information in the lease, you have to follow the lease guidelines. However, there's a lot of situations where maybe the occupancy standards are unreasonable. So if the occupancy standard in the lease is something that is outside of what's kind of already been set as guidance federally, then that could be a concern. Or people living in situations that don't have that specific language in their lease as well. Shyle, do you have anything to add about the occupancy standards piece?
I do. So in general, with occupancy standards, what we see is two people per bedroom plus one extra, assuming that, you know, maybe somebody is using a living room space as a bedroom. However, what we say from a fair housing standpoint is that a housing provider also needs to consider, for example, how large a bedroom is. And if the bedroom is large enough to accommodate, say, two sets of bunk beds, that two people per bedroom, it seems reasonable to say that that would need to be expanded to maybe four people in that bedroom if four people can be in that bedroom healthfully, you know, happily and not causing, you know, issues or problems around that. So there's some gray area around fair housing law where we have to say, you know, a housing provider should really look at the situation. So with these families that are doubling up, it's really important to take into consideration just the size of that unit and could the unit actually easily accommodate, you know, a larger group of people that are living there.
Mm-hmm. But it's a case-by-case basis, it sounds like, then. There's no hard and fast rules on it?
Correct. There's not a lot of clear outline around it, but it's, well, there is some in the Keating memo, K-E-A-T-I-N-G, the Keating memo, and that can be helpful for housing providers in understanding when they may want to shift their occupancy standards to accommodate more folks.
All right. So now, Meg Tinnen, if people do think they're being discriminated against, should they call it out then and there, take it up with the landlord, confront them, or do you prefer they bring you into it?
Yeah, I think if they're gathering information, you know, we are available as a resource. Certainly, we also have a lot of information on our website that can be helpful to folks, too, if they're not feeling comfortable yet, just, you know, making a call, but they want to look into it. We have some really helpful guides for people, you know, living with, you know, past criminal experience, people with disabilities. There's a variety of guides on our website, which is fhco.org. But you know, trying to work it out with the landlord at first is great, having conversations, but if there is discrimination that's occurring, definitely, or there's a suspicion that there's discrimination occurring, you know, we're here to help. So we definitely encourage people to call us and And that's one of the nice things also about the Fair Housing Council, bringing a staff into Southern Oregon is that we also have somebody here locally now, too. So if people want to reach out to me, that's an option as well. And then our enforcement team, can take over in terms of actually investigating or doing advocacy if that's needed for a person.
And have you been based in Southern Oregon for long?
Actually, I just started on September 8th when the fires occurred.
Oh, wow. So you were actually in place, or the plan was set up before the fires even happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So my entry has been, interesting, but I'm really, really, really thrilled to be working in the position and that the Fair Housing Council was already, expanding statewide before the fires happened, and now I'm here and can respond to this as well.
Now, one of the issues I know for folks after the fires is a lot of mobile homes burned. Is that a trickier situation for fair housing because you got people who both own the dwelling but rent the land?
That's a good question.
It's a very, very good question. And one of the things that we found and Meg has been working on is working with advocacy groups that have been basically trying to set aside that land that was used for mobile home parks so that it can be redeveloped as, family housing rather than developers coming in and try to set up housing that's, not affordable, not accessible for those families that have been living there. So we're seeing fair housing concerns happening actually at a city planning level as well. And so it's fantastic that we have a presence there in Southern Oregon where Meg can be involved in some of those advocacy efforts that are happening to really be protecting our most vulnerable folks that are living down there.
Which I noticed that at least one community, Talent, where I live, has already said that they want the mobile home parks to stay mobile home parks. So that's one step in the direction you're talking about here. But all right, a lot still left to come to deal with the housing situation sorting itself out, particularly in the Rogue Valley, where, again, the Alameda Fire destroyed nearly 2,500 dwellings. The Fair Housing Council of Oregon is in Southern Oregon now, as you can hear, to assist people with their housing needs. Meg Tinnen is the Southern Oregon Education and Outreach Specialist. Shail Reuter, the Education and Outreach Director for all the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Their contact info, again, for the hotline, 503-223-8197. I'll put this up on the web, too, 503-223-8197, or email information@fhco.org. Now, you know the website address, too, fhco.org. Meg and Shail, thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's good to have you both.